Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case before the court this morning for oral argument is the State of South Dakota versus John Tafani. With the appellant Tafani is Ms. Donna Bucher, an attorney from Mitchell, and for the appellee State of South Dakota is Mr. Gary Campbell, an assistant attorney general from Pier. Ms. Bucher, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court. This is a case that centers around events that happened on the night of March 5th of 2004. My client, John Tafani, was in a bar drinking with his friend, Tim Stone, when another individual came into the bar by the name of Wade Reiner. Mr. Reiner was playing the jackpot or the lottery. He won $160 or $180, and the men started celebrating together and drinking together. Mr. Tafani and Mr. Stone were not locals. They had traveled up here from Florida, and they had panhandled most of their way here. During the course of their time together, which was maybe 5 or 6 hours, the men drank a lot of beer and talked a lot about the women in their lives, specifically Mr. Reiner's life and Mr. Tafani's life. Mr. Stone was new to the Tafani and the victim. He had been with them for only about 3 weeks. He knew the victim for that period of time, and apparently he didn't like her very well. Mr. Tafani said bad things about his girlfriend or fiance. Said things about how hard she was to get along with, how unreasonable she was in her request for things. And as the night or the day drew on, the men became more and more intoxicated. There were discussions about Mr. Reiner's life as well and how things had been going bad in his life, including the fact that he had just quit his job that day, and he wasn't having very good relationships with women as well. Through the course of the evening, my client was convinced that he should leave this woman, just leave her behind. And they all decided that what they would do was go to Sioux Falls. Mr. Reiner had a vehicle. He would take them to Sioux Falls, and they would leave the victim in Mitchell with her car at her hotel room. Some of the facts that the trial court focused on here were that when they went past the motel, which was on their way to the next bar, Mr. Tafani pointed out the motel room in the van. The key to the motel room was left in the vehicle for a short period of time and then picked up.
I thought the key was placed on the console by our client.
That's right, and then it was picked up later. It was only on the console for a short time. At any rate, during the conversation, Mr. Tafani did not ask Mr. Reiner to do anything to Carla. They continued to talk about what a horrible person she was. It is important to keep in mind in this case that Mr. Tafani and Mr. Reiner did not know each other at all before this day. This is the first time that they had ever met.
Why is that important?
I think because it's important because you have an opportunity. If you know someone, you know what character they have. And if you don't know someone and you share private personal things with them, you're not privy to what they're going to do with that information, what they're going to do with, this. You have no idea what they're thinking about these matters. And I think that's important because all my client did was complain about his fiance. And what Mr. Reiner did with that information was decided that he was going to take it upon himself to help.
But didn't Reiner testify that Tafani wanted her roughed up and sent out of town back to Florida, and that Reiner could do anything he wanted to her?
I believe that's what Mr. Reiner's testimony was, Your Honor. But then later on, he in cross-examination, he responded that he wasn't asked to do anything. that was part of the conversation that they had.
Didn't your client, though, show Mr. Reiner the location of the motel room where the victim was at?
Yes, he did.
Do you have to, I mean, I'm just thinking of some of the maybe bad mob movies I've seen over the years, you know, where these guys have a conversation, and they'd say, well, you know, it sure be nice if Louis disappeared. You know, he's just a nuisance for our business, and you know, and they never actually talk about killing anyone or anything. It's just understood that you know, Uncle Louis is going to disappear. Somebody's going to knock him off. Isn't that the kind of thing that can go on here, where they keep saying things like, you know, it sure be nice. Somebody ought to just beat her up, and somebody ought to rape her. So, you know. And then Reiner responds, yeah, there ought to be a place you could take someone to have that done. And then, and so to the, they keep with this banter back and forth, so until there's kind of an understanding that Reiner can do whatever he wants.
I think the difference between your example and what was happening here is when you talk about a bad mob movie is that, you know, these guys work together and they have a relationship with each other. I think these men had no relationship with each other. They had no prior knowledge of what one would do with the other information. When, you know, I think about, you know, bad movies or bad situations, I think of The Honeymooners. Alice, why I oughta, you know, and he never did anything to Alice, and he was very protective of Alice, and it's much like in many relationships, you can criticize. Like criticize my husband, don't, you know, I will criticize him, but if anybody around me does it, I will rise to his defense. It was that way with my brothers and sisters, and that's, you know, that's the way it was. And I think in this situation, my client did not know what a bad actor Mr. Reiner was until the night wore on. And then he made moves to distance himself from him as well. I mean, they went to Sioux Falls, and they did not come back with him. If my client had the meeting of the minds that the state talks about and that the trial court talked about, I mean, I don't see that there was any criminal intent in the things that my client did. Talked about dumping her, talked about how horrible she was, talked about, you know, made jokes about her, and they said horrible things about her being a crack whore that would give anybody a blowjob for a line. I mean, those are horrible things that somebody that you're wanting to marry you wouldn't expect to say. But I don't think any of those things rise to the level of forming a criminal intent, knowingly and with criminal intent that the statutes or the cases require, say, now do something about this.
Well, you still, I'll come back to my first question, but for the fact your client showed the perpetrator where the victim was, how would he have found her? And he did. He showed her the motel in the room.
I think there were discussions in the bar about where they were staying. I think there were also discussions that Mr. Stone was going to go back to the motel. And, you know, in Mitchell, the location of all these places, I don't know if it appears in the record, but this Sud's Bar and the Quick Fill where they went to get gas, and the motel is just kitty corner from all of that. And then the TLC is just a couple more blocks down the road. Everything is located. I mean, Stone, there's evidence that Stone left to get his stuff, walked over and came back to the bar while Mr. Reiner was changing his laundry around. Everything was in that location, and I think the amount of time that they spent together, it came out where they were staying. It came out how they had traveled here, and I think that information, although it helped him find this woman, he could have found her on his own. His testimony was he didn't know why he came back to Mitchell. He wasn't asked to harm this victim. He wasn't paid to harm this victim. Nor did he say that he paid them, that he gave them this money in an attempt to be able to buy her, to purchase her time.
And the judge seemed to believe that. When you read the judge's reasoning, he seems to believe that Tavani was telling the truth, that he didn't actually tell him to do it, because what the judge says he's guilty of doing is realizing afterwards that this man is dangerous and not doing enough to protect her.
I think if the judge was referring to too late, he'd already formed a criminal intent, and I don't think that. And I respectfully dispute what Judge McVirtue had to say about that, because I think he was focusing on you know, how bad Reiner was and the language that my client used to describe his girlfriend, fiance. You know, those things were horrible, and these men were behaving horribly. But I don't believe that their behavior, particularly my client's behavior, got to the point of forming a criminal intent to have a crime committed against his girlfriend, fiance. If that was what he was thinking, I question whether he would have returned to Mitchell, whether he would have been so concerned about her. I think his behavior after the event, wanting to see her, wanting to know how she was, speaks to his, you know, his real affection to her, and the fact that he would not have formed that criminal intent with Mr. Reiner as it related to this woman. Leaving someone in Mitchell is not criminal.
Let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you about the standard of review, because, you know, Judge McMurtry considered all these things that you're arguing to us today. And, you know, it's really critical what was said in that first bar. And all these other facts that you've been talking about this morning now, Judge McMurtry processed those facts. We're required under our standard review to give him deference as to who he believed and who he didn't believe, and what inferences should be drawn from these facts, and how do we overrule his judgment of who was telling the truth and who wasn't in this case.
Sometimes having the benefit of the cold record, I think, is helpful to do those things. Although you can't see the witnesses and you can't see how they reacted, you do have time. You know, not in a two-day trial span, but you have time to review the record and to review everything that was said and how it was said. You have the benefit of clerks that help you. You can sort it out to see, you know, was this really a criminal intent that these gentlemen formed together?
Judge McMurtry spent 2 days working on this.
I know he did. I know he did, and I know that what I'm asking you to do is say that reasonable minds could not agree with the outcome that he came to. But I think, I don't know, for whatever reason, Judge McMurtry placed perhaps too much emphasis on how these men were treating this woman and how they were talking and pointing out the motel.
But he's entitled to do that, isn't he?
I believe he is. I think you're right. I think you're right. But I think that under the circumstances of this case and all of the factors of this, I think that he made a mistake. I think that he got to criminal intent when my client, was merely joking around. And that's what he said in his statement that was played, that when those words came up in the bar, I didn't take him seriously. I thought he was joking. It made me laugh. And I got up and I went to the bathroom. The other thing that we need to keep in mind here is that there is a third person. And we don't know what Mr. Stone and Mr. Reiner may have or may not have been talking about together as my client is gone from the table. The statement that my client gave was, when he came back, these guys had their heads together, like they were talking about something. And I don't know, you know, that Judge McMurtry considered that. But all of these things, I believe, show that there was no criminal intent on my client's part. Therefore, he could not aid and abet the commission of these crimes.
Well, the state has to prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, every element of the crime of rape and aggravated assault, right?
Correct.
All right. What elements are missing from rape? What elements are missing from aggravated assault?
As it relates to Mr. Reiner.
Aiding and abetting.
The help, the doing an act with knowledge and criminal intent that promotes or encourages or instigates the act of rape or aggravated assault. What's missing here is that my client And Mr. Reiner had a meeting of the minds. There was knowledge shared between the two of them for this criminal intent. Mr. Reiner certainly had the criminal intent necessary, and he did these things, and they were horrible things. What is missing from this piece is my client's participation in them. This is not a case where he's standing outside watching. This is not a case where he says, here, go do this, and then we'll leave together. This is a case where he left the community. He was left by Mr. Reiner in Sioux Falls, and he came back to find that Mr. Reiner had done this. And Mr. Reiner, when he came back to Mitchell, didn't even know that this is what he was going to do. He said he didn't know why he came back to Mitchell. He'd been having a bad day. He had a phone call from his wife or his ex-wife, and he went back to Mitchell instead of going home. His intention when he left Mr. Tofani was to go home, to go to the farm near Alexandria. So I would suggest that what is missing here is the working together to aid or encourage the commission of this crime. And I think just driving by and saying that's where we're staying is not enough to show a criminal intent. I think that's what Judge McMurtry missed in this case. There was also a great deal of emphasis placed on the fact that Tofani got money as a payment for Mr. Reiner's time with the victim in this case, and that came from Mr. Reiner to the victim. That started when Mr. Reiner had her out in that field and was doing these horrible things and said, I paid for you, and this is what I'm going to get. That wasn't something that she heard from my client, and that came from the victim when she reported this happening. And then later on, what Mr. Reiner testified to and what he said at hearings is that he gave the money to these two men because they had bad luck and he had had good luck. He did not indicate at the trial that he was in any way paying for anything.
I'm not clear. Did Reiner get a plea bargain with the understanding he would testify against Tofani?
I'm not familiar with that. I know that his case was done before the testimony.
So it wasn't part of his deal that he would testify?
I'm not familiar whether it was or not. I don't know. The other two issues that we present, I think the case law is clear on how those issues should be resolved. But I think that although this is a sufficiency of the evidence argument, and I know that we're very, very rarely successful on those, I think it's a complicated issue when we're talking about aiding and abetting. And I think in this case, although my client behaved horribly and talked horribly about his fiance, I don't believe that there was ever a meeting of the minds. I don't believe that he ever aided and abetted the commissions of these crimes knowingly. I think he may have unwittingly have said some things that gave this man a clue as to where the victim was in this case, but I don't think that he knowingly engaged in any criminal thinking with this man. And I thank you for your
time. When this case was argued, was there any discussion with the court about the accomplice rule? You know, that there has to be corroborating evidence besides just simply the testimony of an accomplice? That ever discussed with the court? Did the court broach that subject or did the attorneys?
I don't know. I don't recall.
Thank you.
No one has ever chastised for quitting early. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Campbell, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the opportunity to address the defense's arguments. Now, the two arguments regarding suppression and the computer disks, I would prefer to rely on my brief since the defense is basically doing that also. And I think the major issue here is, as the defense indicated, the question of sufficiency of the evidence to show whether this defendant was an aider and abettor in Mr. Reinert's crimes. Now, when you look at the events of March 2004, you have the defendant and his friend Stone going to the bar. You have the Mr. Reinert going there completely separately. They never met each other. They sit there and they talk for, well, 4 or 5 hours. I mean, he's with them along, really, basically, until he drops them off in Sioux Falls later that night. When they're in the bar over this extended period, really the two topics of conversation are Reinert's poor luck and his relationship with women, which aren't too successful at the moment, and Tofani's fiance, C.M. And both Stone and Tofani, throughout that whole period, are constantly downgrading her. They're painting her as a crack whore. And I think the most critical part of this is that they indicate to Reinert, that, according to Reinert, that she should be beaten, raped, and killed. Now, you look at what happened later that night. The defendant is dropped off with Stone in Sioux Falls. Reinert comes back. Reinert shows up at the motel room, knocks on the door, tells CM that, well, John and Stone, they're at my house. You need to get them out of there because my wife's coming home and there'll be trouble. So she goes along with him. He drives her out into the countryside, and without any provocation, starts beating her in the face. Cold cocks her when she's looking out the window the other way. He stops the car, drags her out by the hair, has her on the ground, is strangling her, also beating her, but strangling her until she feigns unconsciousness. Now, you look at that and you think, beaten, raped, killed. The rape was involved in all this because he had her have oral sex with him in the midst of all this. Everything that he did, really, is coming out of these conversations with Tofani and Stone. And Tofani himself admitted that that part of the conversation took place. When he was in the car with...
Wait a minute, Tofani didn't admit the words rape, beaten, and third one.
Killed
were involved.
I think he did. He said that in the, while he was riding in the police car with, I think, Sheriff Kessler and Detective Conrad, there's references to that happening, and it's in the second of the two interviews in the police station. He does say that happened, but he points to Stone and Reinert as being the source of it. So you have him admitting that it happened, although he doesn't take responsibility for himself. Reinert points it at Stone and the defendant.
Is there anything in the court's findings that the court relied upon those particular statements?
I don't think directly, but it is, I think, clearly what the judge is talking about. The judge is talking about, you know, the entire conversations and what Reinert would have derived from it, and he's also talking about what the defendant is doing. And I think if it's indirect, but it is in there. The court looked at it sort of. It's almost like Tofani and Stone, what they're interested in was getting away from CM. That was really all they're interested in. Basically, they're taking Reinert's money, they're conning him along, they're getting him to buy them beer, he's buying them breakfast in Sioux Falls. they're kind of getting everything they can out of him, and at the same time, there's some idea, and keep in mind this is three drunks involved, and I think they're all very drunk at that point. There's some idea that the Reiner is supposed to take her out and beat her and do these other things to get her away from Tofani and Stone. I think to a rational person, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But when you have three drunks at night at the end of 4 or 5 hours of trashing this poor woman, I think it makes some sense in their heads.
What about your opponent's comment that Reiner didn't know what he was going to do himself when he came back to Mitchell?
Yeah, he says that on cross-examination. He says a lot of other things. Well, that has to be taken in light of his other testimony also, because he says that, you know, that he tells CM when he's with him, I paid for you. Money was transferred. CM corroborates that to some extent, because she does bring up that money was exchanged, although that he had said that to her. Excuse me, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Well, the question is, what about Reiner's statement that he didn't know what he was going to do himself when he came back to Mitchell?
I think that is part of the trial court observed that Reiner was a liar and that he would disbelieve most of what he said, but that what Reiner was saying in some respects rang true and it fit what CM was saying and what even Tofani was saying. I think that the trial court, and given the standard of review, the trial court as fact finder can sift through all these various statements and decide what he feels is true.
And well, I realize the trial court can, you know, pick and choose on questions of credibility, but he can't substitute an element of the crime if it's not there, can he?
No.
I mean, there's got to be testimony to prove beyond a reasonable doubt every element of the charge of aiding and abetting aggravated assault and rape. So where is that fatal defect, or where is that smoking gun that says there is criminal intent here to have Reiner rape her, assault, kidnap, and kill her?
Well, I think in the first part, it's that part of the defendant's discussion with Reiner about a woman like that should be beaten, raped, and killed. That's the first part.
You tell me what CD that's on. You mentioned that's a...
Okay, it's... There were two sections where the defendant was talking to the officers, and it's in the latter of the two. There was about a 24-minute section early on.
You don't know which CD that is. There were seven CDs, but only parts of two were actually admitted into evidence.
And most of the rest are largely blank space.
Well, you know, there's a problem there, too, because in working through this, we apparently during the trial, the prosecutor represents that of CD is blank, but when we listen to it, it's not blank. There's quite a bit of material on it that apparently it's a discussion that happened after they got back from getting the receipt. And defense counsel accepted the prosecutor's word. I'm sure the prosecutor didn't know. So now we've got a CD that the court never considered. I'm wondering if what you're referring to now is on this CD that really was not part of the evidence.
Well, I think there might be some confusion as to which discs are which. I ran into that problem when I was trying to listen to this.
None of this was here.
I went through all of them several times, and believe me, it is terribly boring sitting through 45 minutes where the defendant is asleep or not even there. Now, of the discs that I did up that log for, and I sent the defense a copy of that with the last set of discs, the ones which actually have the function of the fast forward, I'm just trying to find that. It's disc six, 13 minutes, 45 seconds to 29 minutes and 9 seconds, as at least the way I...
Okay, and now see, now maybe the discs have been renumbered and we got a problem there, but only disc three and disc seven were admitted into evidence for the trial.
Okay, but that's... Well, disc seven in the second group, I think the problem is that the discs that were admitted at trial and the discs, the final functioning ones, that the state provided, on disc seven in that last set of discs, it's 2 minutes and 40 seconds defendant pacing in the room alone. So it's really disc six in that second group that has that key 7 minute or so interlude where he's talking to the two detectives. I think it was Conrad and Russell. And that was what occurred after they came back from the trip to pick up the receipt.
So are you saying this was before the trial court or it was not?
I'd say it was. It's clear from the trial sequence that there's a 7 minute interlude of interview on one disc, and on an earlier disc there's about 25 minutes. And when you look at those discs, I think it's fairly clear that what was entered at trial was disc six and the earlier disc. Disc three. I know it gets utterly confusing with the arrangement of these discs and the fact that the first set, the actual exhibits, was two of them were scratched.
Well, the other thing about this is, and maybe this is just a personal complaint, but this is a really strange technology that you can't get these discs to run without getting a technician to help you run them. We've had the same problems defense counsel had in getting them to work. And it's not at all like the Highway Patrol discs. We get the Highway Patrol ones, and we can take them home, put them in our DVD players, and watch the entire scene. I don't know what this technology is, but it is kind of... I sympathize with defense counsel on the difficulty in getting this to work.
Well, I agree, Your Honor. I think that the... From my discussions, and this is off the record, the Mitchell Police Department and the Sheriff's Office were not happy with that system that was bought, and was essentially bought for, basically bought without consulting the people who would use it. Now, given that, what's so curious about this is that one of the other defense attorneys didn't have any problems with his reading the discs, and when the discs that defense counsel couldn't get to work were taken back to the state's attorney. The state's attorney popped them in the machine and boom, they worked fine. And even the defense counsel agreed with that. I have, number one, there's a problem with the physical security of the discs. And that came out when the actual exhibits were sent here from the clerk of courts, and I'm not blaming the clerk of courts there.
Well, let's not spend too much time on the disc, because counsel didn't either. So let's just get back to, what evidence do we have that Tofani directed or facilitated Reiner's acts, other than his comments, his denigrating comments about his girlfriend? What evidence is there that he intended that Reiner was going to do this?
Well, I think what the trial court decided, and I think it's clear from what from Reiner's testimony, and indeed some of the defendant's own, he said that his motive was to get away from her, that Reiner was supposed to go there and take care of business. And I think unstated but understood is that he's going to go there and he's going to beat her and assault her.
Okay, understood, because there really is no, Reiner doesn't say that he was told to do this.
No.
And certainly Tafani never admitted that he told Reiner to do this. So we have to infer, the court has to infer, that because he's bad-mouthing his girlfriend, he intends that this man is going to do these things to her. We have to infer that.
Well, it actually goes, there's evidence here that the defendant's attitude towards CM was really not what the defense portrays. When he comes, there's no verbatim plotting of you will do this and you will do that. Instead, it's sort of a general thing. And when the defendant comes back, he's still, even in the interview with the police, he's still referring to CM as a bitch. And that's something the trial court latched onto as supporting much of what Reiner testified to. But again, you go back to beaten, raped, and killed. You have him pointing out where she is. You have him putting the car key on the console, the motel key on the console, all of which is pointing Reiner straight at CM. The defendant has almost painted a bullseye on her back, and Reiner's understanding is he's free to do what he wants. He's paid money for it. That is the defendant's casting her away in order to get away from her. It's almost like a military delaying action. It's the Russian sleigh where you throw the baby off the back to the wolves in order to save yourself. That's what the defendant did here. And that's what the trial court really, really inferred from what was there. Now, is this a strong case? No. Is it a sufficient case? Yes. I would say that the evidence was sufficient. Aiding, abetting, he's assisting. The planning is sort of weak, but he's definitely assisting Reiner. He's making CM a target, and I think that's where this all comes down to. He, just as if he shot Reiner from a bow, he sent him to do what he did. And on that basis, I would ask that this court affirm the defendant's convictions. If there are no questions,
I've got a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree that there's a requirement that in the event of an accomplice, the accomplice's testimony has to be viewed with distrust or with caution?
I would agree with that.
Okay. And what is a distrust or caution? I think we've had a fight over that in the past.
I think it's been expressed both ways. And you might also look at it as accomplice, a requirement for corroboration.
All right. Either way, can you make the kind of inference that the trial court did if you're required by law to view that testimony of the accomplice with either distrust or caution?
Yes, I think you can.
How?
Well, the Reiner's testimony doesn't stand in isolation. The trial court looked to statements by CM and statements by the defendant and found that they interlocked to a certain degree. There was corroboration, both by the victim and by the defendant. Now, the corroboration is only partial, but it would only need to be partial in the case of an accomplice, which is somewhat analogous to all this. I think the trial court could make the necessary inferences and could believe what he chose to of Reiner's testimony. Now, the trial court made it perfectly clear that he distrusted Reiner, so that he was a liar and that he would disbelieve much of what he said. But he also said parts of it rang true. And And the other, and he did refer to corroboration on the part of CM and the defendant himself. So on that basis, I would say, still, despite the fact that Reiner has to be looked at with suspicion or distrust, the trial court did that, and I think the trial court's decision should stand given the standard of review.
Thank you. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Bucher, you have 10 minutes.
The question was asked earlier, what evidence is there that there was any direction or facilitation by my client for Mr. Reiner's acts? There was no evidence of that. There was none presented. The state indicated that there was an understanding as to what would happen after Tafani left and went to Sioux Falls. There was no verbatim plotting. I think in this case, it is clear that there was no plan. There was no aiding. There was no abetting. The question was asked, when did Tofani say that she should be beaten, raped, and killed? Quite frankly, I don't even want to get into that CD thing because I still haven't listened to them or been able to make them work. But I
did. Are you the trial counsel that had to struggle through that?
I am not.
Oh, okay.
I am not. He was in my firm, and I can tell you we don't have the greatest technology there. But after the suppression hearing, we did get transcripts of what was on those CDs. And as you recall, during the suppression hearing, there was some discussion that the prosecutor didn't have his CDs because they were with the transcriptionist that day.
Where are the transcripts? They're not in the record.
They were not. They were not. But the only help I can get in getting to that CD is that on CD number 7, when Tafani is allegedly confessing to this involvement, Reiner is the one that says that she should be beaten, raped, and murdered. And at that point, my client said he thought it was a joke. He did not confirm that that's what should happen to his client or to his fiance. He got up laughing, thinking it was all a joke. There was no meeting of the minds here. Perhaps Mr. Reiner, in his evil, horrible world, thought that there was a meeting of the minds, but there is nothing in the record to show that my client and Mr. Reiner got together on this plan. The fact that my client continues to call his fiance a bitch in one breath and his fiance in the next breath, quite frankly, I can't explain it. I don't understand. He still thought of her as his fiance even after all of this happened. I think that shows, again, that he had no intent to ditch her permanently, to have her killed or raped or beaten. He was going along with the conversation that these guys were having, and there was no meeting of the minds, and there is absolutely no evidence of that. And I think that the weak sort of planning that the state talks about in this case is not sufficient to support a finding of guilt, and I would ask that this court reverse and remand this case. I don't have anything else. Do you have anything more for me?
Once again, you're not asked to ask for quitting early.
Thank you.
Thank you. Court will be in recess. Because we're on the internet, we have to start on the hour. So we'll be in recess till 10 o'clock.